In this blessed study of Bhagavad Gita, we have been studying the 13th chapter, and we saw that the importance of this lies in showing the true nature of our self, which is unchanging, which therefore is all pervading too, which is divine. It is our divine nature that is indicated here, and the ignorance because of which it gets covered. The separation of the appearance from the reality, the changing from the unchanging, that is the main thrust of this very important chapter. This one has to keep on doing in life, as we discussed, that this is a very practical exercise, that what is temporary and what is permanent. The priorities of our life we fix accordingly. Whatever is temporary, okay, we don't give it a top priority, because it comes and it goes. Nothing is permanent about it. So that which is permanent is most important. Relatively speaking, that which is more durable is more important than the less durable. And so this gives us a very practical basis also to frame the priorities of our life. What should we be considering in life as very important, that which brings stability and also the proper direction to our living. Our goal, our objective can be decided on the basis of this, that what is permanent, what is lasting, let me pay more attention to that than that which is impermanent, not lasting. So that was told in the verse that we were discussing, the second verse. That a very bold statement was made therein, very counterintuitive, in the sense that whatever we feel around or see around is opposite to what is being stated there. What we normally perceive is that things in the world are different from each other, and also the essence of those things also therefore we consider to be separate, distinct. The I here and the I there is not seen as one and the same. It is very difficult to believe otherwise, that I am I am such a nice person. Every person thinks so about oneself, that I am such a nice person, how myself could be same as a terrible villain? And they need to be distinct. How can a person who is getting all the nice things in the world be same as the one who is continuously at the receiving end of the fortune? So therefore we feel that there is the differentiation. But Lord makes an emphatic statement that know that I am the unchanging knower, the reality. I am the one knower in all the different changing names and forms that you see around. All the different bodies, they do not have the different souls. They perceive in every body is the same. Like you take water in different glasses, and water is same in spite of the difference in glasses. I am repeating this. One may say that why you are saying this again and again. We discussed this in the last class. We discussed this in the previous class also a little bit. The reason is that this is a very important point that in spite of repetition we tend to forget. So let us remember this, that the self is same in all different changing names and forms. Their difference does not affect the unity, oneness of the self. This has tremendous implications. We saw many of them, discussed some of them, let us say, in our last class. And Lord says that the knowledge of these two is truly truly the knowledge of reality. That is knowledge. Knowledge of only one of them is not real knowledge. You have to see both sides, that the Lord is one in all different manifestations. But the manifestations are necessarily different, just as we need not or should not imagine that the essential soul in different manifestations, because the manifestations are different, and let us not conclude that the soul is also different. Similarly, we need not superimpose the oneness of the soul on the multiplicity of the manifestation. There is the difference in manifestation that should not be forgotten. And both these mistakes take place. It is therefore the devotees have this question many times, that how can then I behave with a thief or an evil person? An evil person, should I then also, because God is in that person as well, should I be friend with him, or should I consider the holy company equivalent to the evil company? No, that's not the case. In manifestation there is difference. One must remember that difference too. The difference in manifestation is to be remembered. And as soon as we transcend the manifestation, we should leave aside the difference also. That just as we know, for example, that an orange, sweet orange, the orange sweet. But that does not mean the skin is sweet. The skin is has a very different bitterish taste. So the bitterish taste of the skin should not be overlooked, because the inside the orange is sweet doesn't mean the skin also is sweet. And the skin is bitter doesn't mean that the orange is bitter too. So the skin of the all of us, the outer casings of everything is different. Difference lies there. And where is the oneness? Penetrate that aspect of us which does not change. There is the oneness, the inner nature, the knower. And here the name given to it is Kshetrajna, the knower of the field. that is the same one. The fields are distinct, but the knower in all these fields is not different. It is the one and the same. It is the same. Indeed, as we saw last time, in the bed bug sucking your blood as well as you, they are not different. But that doesn't mean so you should not kill the bed bug. The distinction is there so far as the names and forms go. But the reality is not the same. Therefore, you should not get angry with the bed bug. The two things are different. Don't hate the bed bug. You kill the bed bug, fine. But kill it as a different appearance. Knowing that it doesn't get really killed, but don't get angry about the bed bug. Don't say that, well, this rascalish bed bug dares to suck my dung. That is wrong. It is. Therefore, it is important, friends, to understand the distinction. Otherwise, the life will become terribly complicated when we superimpose these changing and differential characters of the manifestation with the oneness and unchanging character of the self. One has to remember on what level we are discussing. And then we will see how these problems, many such problems, many times it gets asked here also as questions. Eternally these questions have been coming up, and mostly they come because of the confusion between the true self and the manifestations. So, now in the next verse, the third verse, Lord is trying to explain what is exactly the known or the field, the kshetra, the Sanskrit word kshetra. What is it? What is that is known? Tat kshetram yascha yadriksha yadvikari yatascha yat sacha yo yat prabhavascha tatsamasena meshrunu. What is kshetra? What that kshetra is, what it is like, what its modifications are, whence it arises, and what its forms are, and also what the other entity, the kshetrajna, is, and what its powers are. Hear that from me in brief. Lord is telling it in brief and not elaborating too much. So we have to be intelligent to grasp the idea in brief. The tat kshetram, that what is that kshetra, he gives the important characteristic that we had earlier also seen. Yet that what it is like, that yadrik means how it is seen, and yadvikari, that that which is changing all the time, there is the modifications that arise from it, and what is the unchanging self, the drik means the one who is the knower, the seer. What are the characteristics of these? Let us look at that. So this is Lord says, now we shall look at that in brief. And then he describes the characteristics. Rishibhir bahudha gītam chando bhir vidhai prithak Brahma Sutra Padashaiva Hetu Madhir Vinishchitaihi. It has been sung differently by the sages, and variously in different Vedic hymns, as also in the passages indicative and descriptive of Brahman, furnished with reasons and decisive. He tells these things to show that what he is going to tell is not some unique invention of his. This is not just for Arjuna that Lord is telling it for the first time here. No, this has been told in the Vedas and in other scriptures, in the Brahma Sutras, where a rational approach is taken. And Brahma Sutra is the statements in Upanishads. Upanishads are the final authority. What is exactly the philosophy of Upanishads? There are many, many Upanishads. So, which portion of what Upanishad is to be taken analogous or describing the same substance as in the other Upanishads? So, this is then properly explained in what is called Brahma Sutra, the aphorisms about the nature of Brahman by the great sage Vyasa. He has described how we can rationally understand the philosophy in the Upanishads. So there also he has spoken about it. So I am telling you something that is not new. This has been going on for ages. So this is what Lord is indicating, is that there is authority to what I am telling. This is all the seekers of truth have experienced this earlier. This has been recorded and told, documented by different sages in various ways. So, if you want to take other opinions, you will find that also the same thing you will find told by the other people as well. Why he is telling this is because even in the description of the known, we will find certain things that makes us wonder, hey, is it the seer or the seeing? Is it really I or is it the part of the seeing? Certain aspects that will be told will be seen it is kind of revolutionary that in 7th chapter of this Bhagavad Gita also a part of that this has been described as the lower nature of Lord. Lord says, I have two natures. One is the lower, another is the higher. And the lower nature, what is described there as the lower nature, apara prakriti, the lower nature described there is same as what is described here as kshetra, the field, what is known. So, what is known, he begins with, in the 5th verse, महाभूतान्यहंकारो बुद्धिरव्यक्तमेव च इन्द्रियाणि दशैकं च पञ्चचेन्द्रियगोचराः इच्छा द्वेष सुखं दुःखं संघातश्चेतनाधृतिः एतत्क्षेत्रं समासेन सविकारमुदारितम्. This is the verse 5 and 6. The five great elements, egoism, that is ahankara, the intellect and the unmanifest, the 10 sense organs and the one mind, and the five objects of the senses, desire, aversion, happiness, misery, the body, intelligence, and patience. And thus the Kshetra has been described in brief together with its modifications. That five elements, five great elements, means they, the world is described in Upanishads, in Vedanta in general, as composed of the five elements. The Atman alone is the reality, the Self alone is the reality. But when that reality is obscured, then what happens? That the all-pervading Self is seen in one point. It is really all-pervading. But then there is no creation, because Self alone is. There is nothing else. Everywhere, all-pervading Self alone, nothing else is there. So as the creation proceeds, what we need first is time and space. So how is it made? The Self gets contracted in a point. Then, now you see therefore Self as a tiny bit something inside me. So inside my body, that which is all pervading now is seen in a point. And now therefore there is space and time. So you have now the basic requirement for the creation. Everything that you see is made out of this space and time. So that is called in description of five elements as Akasha. So the Taittiriya Upanishad begins there that tasmād vā itasmād ātmanah ākāshah sambhūtah. The first element called space and time comes out from there, from the Self. When you don't see the Self, you see all these things. So ākāshah sambhūtah, the first element. Then the second element comes from that. Akashad vayuhu. The akasha is space and time, and the vayu is the element that makes you have the sense of touch. That element came the next. Then came the element of sight, Agni, that is called Agni, the fire. Then came the next element, that which makes up for the sense of taste, that is called water there, Apaha. But it really doesn't mean this water that you see, but that which generates the sense of taste. And then last is Prithvi, the grossest element comes from that. Prithvi means you can, it is, the word translation will be earth. But it is, should not be confused with the earth outside. In this description, many times even the Indian students, let alone the Western scholars, they also get confused because of the correspondence that it has. These words have some other meaning in the day-to-day language. But it should be remembered that these are words which are used in the technical sense. This is a terminology. It is not to be thought of as the akasha or the space or the sky means this space around here. No. It may have some relation to it, but that's about it. What it is meant is the fine subtle element which supports our sense of sound. I will come back to how these elements actually are thought of by the sages. And that is very interesting idea. But let us first think of that these are not to be confused with the water, because when you read water, you think of what you drink. It has some connection to it, but that is not what is meant by water here. It is a fine subtle element that like in terminology used for computers, you say mouse. That doesn't mean that you put the trap and catch or those who run about. That is not what is meant by mouse when you are discussing computer, or when you speak about Bluetooth. You don't think that you have to take it to dentist for repairs. It is not a tooth, but the word is like that, that's all. So it is similarly, these words, they are not to be confused with the similar or the same words that we use in our day-to-day language. It has a very different meaning. So, what is this, how these five elements are thought of? Why not six? Or why not four? Why not three? The reason for this is that human beings see the world with five senses. And so you have five elements as a natural process of understanding the various aspects of this universe. This question gets asked many times. Our science, chemistry, for example, tells of so many 115, 20, whatever that number is, so many elements. And how come that those sages in the Vedanta scriptures you speak of only five elements? We don't get it. It is how do you say that Vedanta is very scientific? And see, our science tells of 100 plus elements, and your Vedanta speaks only of five elements. How is it? What is right? See, chemistry or science, it goes on trying to find out only one type of element, really speaking. What they have discovered as 93 or 120 or whatever elements, they are only the different particles that they have found, and that is not really the end of the elements. You can find many, many, infinitely many, really, because many of the later elements have been found not as the naturally existing elements, but they were manufactured elements. And you can continue the process of manufacturing more and more elements, go on adding more and more to the list. It is not ending. But what this analysis of five elements, it is a final permanent analysis. Because first idea that you have about the universe is that it exists, this universe is. And how do you get this idea? If I ask you what is the proof that the universe exists, you may say, well, I experience it. I am talking to you, I am seeing you, I am listening to you, I am touching various other things, I am breathing air and all these things. You know, I can move around in the universe. Is it not sufficient a proof that the universe is? Had it not been, how could I have, you know, hugged you or had handshake with you? How could I smell this nice flower? How could I see in so many things? So, then comes the question. See how the mind is so analytical there and goes perfectly right to the point. Then, what it means basically is that you experience this universe, and that is the proof of its existence. So now, instead of analyzing what is there in the universe, let us see the different elements as you experience them. So you experience the universe, so there is, you experience it through five sense organs. So there is, you experience the universe means there is something in the universe that affects your sense of sound, that is connected with your sense of sound, one element. There is something that affects your sense of touch, element number two. That is how we experience the universe. We hear, we touch, we see. There is the third element. There must be something in the universe that affects the sense of sight. Then there is something that affects the sense of taste, and something that affects the sense of smell. So the universe has these five elements. What else is there in the universe apart from this? There is nothing else. Therefore there are these five elements in the universe. The universe consists of five elements. So this is the human analysis. Suppose somebody has only three sense organs, then the universe of that person will have only three elements. Somebody has, say, seven sense organs, it will have, that universe will have seven elements. It is a very clear understanding of the sages that since the proof of the existence of this universe is because I experience it. So it is your universe that we can speak of. You experience it, and thus the elements get clarified by that. It gets resolved by that, that you knew, since you have five ways of experiencing it, your universe has five elements. And from the combinations of these, different permutations and combination of these, I am not going into the details, but it is an interesting study. Those of you who would like to go a little deeper in it, I will again suggest that they can read a Vedanta Sara, a beautiful book. It is a bit later text, but in something like 15th century maybe, written by Sadananda Yogindra, and it gives a detailed description. You can find it in other scriptures like Viveka Chudamani, Panchi Karanam, and so forth, that how this process of from the finest elements to the gross world of our day-to-day experience comes about. So these five elements, Lord says, is the part of the seen, known, that is part of the kshetra. Then what else? Then ahankara, the sense of I, the ego. Of course, the commentators have told that this actually means it at the universal level, not just at the individual level, but the universal level. And that again is a masterpiece of the Vedantic analysis, that everything has a universal aspect as well as an individual aspect. And the universal aspect means this whole universe, it has some kind of a soul entity that becomes the body, and then that is the idea that it is the universal elements, the universal body. So this ahankara, the I, the sense of I, each of us has a sense of I. I am so and so. Now imagine that sense of I, where the being considers the whole universe as its body. That being which considers the whole universe as its body, the I of that being. Can you think of it? You can think of it. I many times give this example to make the things a little easier. That, see, we have so many different microbes in this body. Each of our bodies has so many microbes. Then each of those microbes has their own I, is it not? Their sense of, yes, I am this particular microbe, and that is what I need to eat. Same idea like our life, that we, I am so and so, and I need that for as my food. So the microbes also, they have the idea that I am so and so, and this is my world. Now we have our own I that includes the little I of all these microbes too, because we consider this body which includes the bodies of the microbes also, and thus we have that I. Now imagine that that particular body in which all our little bodies, even the body of the sun and the stars and the galaxies and whatever, that all is different small or big parts. So the I of that big being, and that is what is really told here according to many commentators. They have given reason also for that, but really for our discussion it doesn't matter much. And then it says that buddhi, the intellect, and the unmanifested, the from which everything comes up, the prakriti, that which is not manifest, the unmanifested state of all these apparent manifestations, that also is part of the seen or the kshetra, the known, not the knower. So knower is not any of these. It is neither the manifested things nor the unmanifested state of their appearance. This is made very clear in Vedanta, and especially because when Bhagavad Gita was being given, there was lot of argumentations, debates going on between the followers of Sankhya and followers of Vedanta. In Sankhya, also the same the idea that prakriti, the unmanifest, that is not the self or the purusha. So this up to that idea is perfectly agreed by Vedanta too, that this prakriti, the unmanifest state of all these matters, this matter is also inert. It is seen, it is not the seer. So one needs to ponder a little bit about it. This is as such not difficult to understand, but has to think a little more. All this requires a little more abstract thinking on the part of the listeners. Then it is told that Indriyani Dashaikam Cha, the 10 sense organs and one mind, the internal instrument through which all this is seen. So that 10 organs and the mind, that is another aspect, and 5 the aspects that the world has, that the senses perceive, indriya gochara. These are the gross elements that we sense through the different sense organs. Same 5 elements, but not at the subtle level, but the gross level. So these are, this is, then it is not over here. The kshetra, the seeing, is further described. What? Ichha, dvesha, that we have the feelings as well. So many different feelings come, and our identification is with the feelings too. Many a times in our discussion, especially when I speak to college students and such, that come on, let us see what is the exact nature of our I. Tell me, think about it. What is I? Is this the body? Many immediately understand that this is not the body, this self is not the body. I am not the body. But my feelings, my emotions, that is really I. I am happy, I am miserable, that is really I. Body, I am not the body, that is more easily understandable, acceptable. But what about the feelings of my heart, my emotions? That is I, is it not? We do feel like that. And we feel that our life really is in it. Lord tells that also is part of the seeing. That your desires, that is not you, it is an object, it is seen. Do we not feel it, see it? It is known and not the knower. We know that I have the desire to eat chocolate. So it is, you know it, means it is known and not the knower. So just as you know something outside the body, similarly you also know your emotions. So there is the desire, there is the hatred, then pleasure and pain, they are also seen and not the fear. And also, that is the other, that the combination of all these, the various things put together, that is called sanghata. That also an answer as I get, that all this put together is I. No, these are all seen, and putting the seen together doesn't make it seer. It is not seer. It is again the things seen brought together, that it still is seen, it still is known and not the knower. This is very subtle, very beautiful idea, that our emotions and our attachments, they also really do not define us. They are part of the seen, not the seer. Friends, forgive me, I cannot make these things too simple. One has to really pay attention, you know. It is not that everything can be brought at the level of, you know, little kids, the sentences without compound words and like that. It is not possible to present these ideas more simple, in a more simplified way, but they are very important. One has to pay a little more attention and they can be grasped. That these are really interesting things, that this is known. This question comes many times, that even the sense of that I, that feeling of life, chetana, that also is considered, that because of the combination of these we feel a sense of life there. So that also is part of known, not the knower. And dhriti, the sense here, it is little patience. And the word dhriti has that meaning. Many other meanings are associated with the word dhriti. It means the power of sustenance, to hold things together. That also is part of the seen, the known, not the knower. This question can be asked, and many times it gets asked like that, that what is the difference between us and a machine? What is the difference between, say, a computer and a human being? Suppose we make the all the functions that human beings do, if we can simulate all of them, many are already there are technologies that you say wonderful things. There is the simulation of many senses, not to the level of our brain, but it is amazingly, that close in many, unimaginable, I mean, that some years back it was unimaginable that how close this simulation is. You can soon have car, that driverless car. You can just put where you want to go, and the car will see everything. It is negotiate the traffic. It will stop at the red light. Human beings many times don't stop, but it will proper stop. It is. Such things and on experimental level are already there. And you can make them look like human beings. Many years back I saw one robot like that. In St. Louis, that was welcoming everyone at that big gate. What is it called?
The Arch.
The Arch, yeah, exactly. Thank you. Who said? Oh, thank you, Mike. The Arch. And as I went there to see, that there was a welcoming guy there saying hello, and then I saw, oh, it was a robot. That was not really a human being. But how do you separate it? Is there a criterion to separate that this is human being and this is a machine? And Vedanta says there is absolutely nothing that you can show. And they all that we call body, argument, well, those machines, they don't have emotions. How do you know they don't have? First question is that, how do you know that they don't have emotions? You may not have the sensitivity to sense their emotions. Does it mean that they don't have them? Many do not feel the emotions of others, how the others feel, and we don't have the sensitivity for that. Does it mean that they are not like human beings? Many did not think that they, plants, they don't have sensations. In fact, It is. It used to be thought earlier that that women don't have souls; they are just thought of as properties. You know, it is. What is the difference between a human being and a machine? There is, if you analyze, there is absolutely no difference really. Human beings and machines, the body, the mind, all that is just machine. Our true self is beyond that. The self is beyond that. There is, this is very important to know, because otherwise we get identified at some level of our changing personality. Anything that changes is not I. It is a part of the scene and therefore subject to change, subject to modification, subject to bringing together and making. It can be made. It is made actually. It is not something that is very different from other things. And if you consider it different from other things, each thing is, each manifestation is different from other manifestation. There is a speciality of each of them. A computer is a manifestation. An ant is a manifestation. A stone pebble is a manifestation. A chair is a manifestation of the same one reality. Human beings, because of our very evolved, very big ego and big stupidness also, big stupidity associated with it, we think that we are alive and the chair is not. That's not, it is not right. We don't have the sensitivity to feel the life there. That's all what we can say. But one can go a step further and actually one can feel the life that pulsates in everything, friends. Everything then starts appearing as alive, as living. And so, everything that is seen, that is felt, whether at the physical level or at the emotional level, it is matter, kshetra, seen, and not this year. So, then, okay, we may get the sense. Now I understand. But then, what is the knower? It is, you have told a lot about what is known. You have spent two verses for telling that. Okay, we get a sense of it. But now tell us about the knower. It is expected that you told that both these things will be told. Now tell me about the knower. We would be looking at the Lord expectantly. Okay, one part clear. Now let us move to the other part. What is the knower? And Lord does not specify, this is the knower. It appears that he has suddenly forgotten that he is going to tell about it and started on something else. No, friends. He started describing the virtues. Those virtues, acquisition of those virtues will make us intuitively feel the nature of the knower more and more. We will start becoming it. Because you see, the contradiction involved can be understood here. That because it is eternal knower, how can you know it? It never becomes known. So its knowledge cannot be given as the knowledge of the seeing. The characteristics of the seeing can be told. The characteristics of seer can never be told. It is seer, it is knower, it is one characteristic that was told, it is same in everyone. It is the Lord that is in everyone, that is it. But how to know that? A very important topic, and that is where the spiritual life really rests, that it is the change of our life. It has to become a life put into a discipline of virtue. The blessed qualities have to be acquired, and then that knowledge of the self will start actually dawning in us. It cannot be told. It can never be indicated as this, because then it will become known. It will not remain known. So, how to get that? So, Lord begins telling all these virtues. We shall, a very important topic, we shall discuss that by His grace coming Friday. What is?
This is for
next Friday. Yeah. Yes, the next Friday. This is Friday. So we will discuss it on next Friday by His grace. And any questions? Yes, Abhijit.
Is bliss knower or the known?
Bliss as an object is known. It is in the sense of pleasure, it is known.
Which are for Satchidananda?
That is again a description. That is a description, and therefore it can be only of known.
Not the inherent nature of the known.
It is not the inherent nature because of the words. The inherent nature comes by transcending them. That they are given therefore as indications. How do you, how a seeker goes about knowing the truth? So these indications are given. That it is existence itself, knowledge itself, bliss itself. So you get an indication to start to look for it. It is therefore the method is shown there. You try to see the source of all existence. Wherever you see existence, see that it is the Lord that is the existence there. That which is name and form goes away, so it is non-existence. So avoid confusion between the two. So this is given as indications. There are these signs are given for they as indication, not really anything that can give this as a description of Brahman. It is not a description. It is an indication that one can see. Sri Ramakrishna therefore used to say, he used to actually, it is a quote that he used, that Brahman is has never been sullied. It has never been touched or tasted by anyone, because it is never uttered by mouth. About it you cannot utter anything by mouth. That is the idea. That so Brahman, you cannot speak anything about it. It is one word that is used, is therefore neti neti, not this, not this. So in the light of that, one has to get the feel of this idea, that it is not something that you can indicate as existence. Sometimes this study of Vedanta involves these funny things. It is good if our understanding about it is clear, that it is just help to make us more clear about our understanding, but it should not be taken as objective indicators, that they write on the board Brahman, Sat, Chit, Ananda. So then you confine it as if it is Sat, Chit, Ananda, existence, consciousness, bliss. Then that concept becomes then an attribute of Brahman, which is attributeless. So one must clearly understand that the concept that existence, consciousness, bliss, that those concepts that get generated by listening to these words, that is not the truth or the Brahman. But if you look at the source of this, then you can reach there. It is a help to get there. It is a road that is indicated to you to get there.
Please, one question.
Yes, please. Yes, please tell that.
Where does a soul go after death? How long does it stay in that state, and how does it live on?
Oh, well, that is a very big question, really. How a soul takes birth, how it dies, and how long does it take to take rebirth? See, a soul, embodied soul, it is that which identifies with body and mind. The external physical body drops off, and then a new body is taken up, new physical body with the same mind and so forth. So the same mind is taken by this into the new physical body. So that is the and how long it takes, it depends. It is not, you cannot really tell, because the concept of time in body and out of body, they differ. Each body, because of the particular brain programming, has different ideas of time and space. So you cannot really tell how long does it take and how it happens. This is a really big topic, and right now we cannot answer it, but in 15th chapter we will get a lot of opportunity to discuss this. When we shall come to 15th chapter, many of these ideas will get discussed there. Yes, George?
Well, in Mahana Maharshi, actually his whole teaching is, who am I?
Yes.
And he says, if you keep asking that question, eventually that's all you think about. In other words, that's the case.
That's true.
Well, I mean, do you know people that have reached it that way? By asking, who am I, to remind yourself that you are not the body, and so forth.
Nobody has told me that. Yes, you
know.
Your
experience of going around and so forth.
Well, nobody has told me that. I don't know.
Well, I wonder if it works.
It will work. Since a great sage like Ramana Maharshi has told it, also Sri Ramakrishna has told it, scriptures have told it. And it sounds to our, it is to our rational understanding too, that that is a very good way of moving ahead. That's true.
Well, I mean,
who am I? Keep on asking, who am I?
Yeah,
and you will get there. In fact, this is what is the 13th chapter is basically that process. Who am I? So what is the critical point is that analysis should continue, and whatever is not I should then be discarded. One should not get identified with that. So that analysis, who am I, should continue, should not get stuck at any level. And therefore these virtues will be described, that exactly is that.
Right.
Yeah.
But in other words, all the other systems of spiritual paths we can go on and so forth, there's nothing wrong with that.
Not only nothing wrong, they are very necessary, they are very helpful, very necessary to carry on this inquiry.
Right. Mm. But this one chapter in that book there about the dust on your feet, it says the direct path.
It is, well, the direct path, all paths are really direct paths.
Are
they? Yes, yeah. It is.
Or more direct.
Okay. See, it is, all paths really come to that. So, it is not a very different thing. Some come through a devotional approach, some come through the approach of inquiry, but that's about it.
Yeah, in other words, like he says, all the other things are helpful and everything, but if you really want to get to the matter of who you really are, you have to keep asking yourself that day in and day out.
Well, that is also helpful, that's all. Like other things are helpful, just helpful, that's all.
It won't bring you there?
Well, that is just a helpful means it will bring you there. Other things also are helpful because they bring you there.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in other words, when you say, who am I, it's just to remind yourself you're not the body, you're not...
Yeah, yes, that requires so many such virtues. So let us conclude with the closing prayer. Gita Sudita Kartavya Imanya Shastra Vidarevi या स्वयं पद्मनाभस्य मुखपद्मादिनिश्चिता एतं शास्त्रं देवकी पुत्रगीतं देवो देवो देवकी पुत्रगीव एको मन्त्रः स्वस्य नामान्यानि कर्मा एकं दस्य